You make me wonder if there is a feeling of a shared religious life or spirituality between the different tribes. Is there such a thing as a more or less homogeneous Native American tradition?
Yeah, each tribe has its own ways and has its own beliefs. Even within one tribe, you know, there are different clans that will do things in a certain way, or maybe just had always done things for generations in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really difficult for clans to criticize other clans or people within one family now, since we don't really have a clan system.
Yes.
They do something a certain way. They really shouldn't criticize another family within the same tribe for doing things another way, because that was passed down to them in that way. And so, and it's the same with tribes. You know, we shouldn't look at other tribes and criticize them for doing things the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
The Creator gave that way to them for a reason and a purpose. Today, you know, there are a lot of things that are similar. Now that we're able to travel to other reservations and visit easily, we're starting to see some of those things that are common to all tribes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that almost every tribe today, you know, cedar is something that's really important. You know, a sacred plant that the Creator had blessed, gave it certain qualities for us to be able to use to help, you know, to help ourselves on this earth. And, you know, there's several stories about the cedar and how it came to be. And there are things like, you know, the eagle is something that's important. The buffalo. A lot of tribes have ceremonies that are similar to the Sundance. They either have a Sundance or something that's similar to that. That's kind of an annual rite of renewal for the tribe.
Yes.
And for the people, not just the tribe, but for really for the world. There is that belief that what they're doing isn't only benefiting them and themselves, but that it's really benefiting the world. And that rite of renewal for really the world. But I think that there are certain ceremonies, you know, there are certain practices that most Indian people do. The powwow is something that is really growing, you know, among all tribes, and tribes that never had that type of dancing and singing, you know, are kind of adopting those now. And even the way of dancing.
Yes.
And it's more of a social, you know, if it was a spiritual, ceremonial thing, I think it would be more difficult for people just to take that upon themselves, adopt that way. But because it's more of a social gathering, powwows are, then there are a lot of tribes that are taking that and making it a part of their way of life.
But does it also have the spiritual dimension for people who are interested in that?
Oh, yes. Yes, because through the dancing and through the singing, we're taught that healing can take place. That when you come out onto the dance, that healing can occur through that through that dancing, and that it is a prayer. And so even though it's a social event, there's still that element to it. And so, and some people take it more seriously. You know, there are others that are more competitive, or they're more into, well, what is the new trend? What are people wearing nowadays? What are the new songs? You know. But there are those that take it serious, and they know that those that the dancing is prayers, and they and when they go out there, they really are praying for our people, and dancing and praying through the dancing. And so, there's that side of it too. But yeah, definitely there are spiritual elements to even the powwow, which is more of a social event.
Earlier on, you mentioned the concerns of Chief Washuki about the education of the young people. Is there a sort of mixed system with the American educational system where the Native Americans are integrating something of their culture?
Well, you know, today it's really interesting because we're able to integrate more of the culture now in the schools and even in religion. You see, like in the Catholic Church and some of the other churches that are pretty strong on the reservation, they do incorporate a lot of the culture and the teachings in their ways of doing things. And even If you go to the reservation today, you'll see some of the missions where they built kind of a community, a church, you know, place of prayer, and schools, and, you know, different buildings for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those churches really have a lot of the whatever tribe, wherever they're at, whatever tribal influence,
mm-hmm.
Is real strong within their religion. And so you go into, say, for example, there's a St. Stephen's Catholic Church in St. Stephen's, Wyoming. And if you go into their church, the outside of the church is, everything is geometric Native American designs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful church.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go inside and everything, Mary, instead of looking like a white woman, she looks like an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus
mm-hmm.
also looks like an Indian. The altar is a drum. Everything is Native American,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's nice. You know, it's nice to see that.
And from the Native American point of view, if someone is baptized and follows the Christian way, that wouldn't interfere with the practice of the Indian spirituality.
No, and you know, that's what's interesting about Native American
mm-hmm.
spirituality is that we're very inclusive, and we don't say our religion is better or yours is not as good or you're not going to get to heaven if you don't do these things that we do,
mm-hmm.
things like that. That's just not a part of our way.
Mm-hmm.
We strongly believe that the Creator made all of the people on this earth and that He gave them all a certain way to return to Him. And whatever path they choose to get back to Him,
mm-hmm.
it's going to lead to Him, regardless. There's a teaching that we have that we always use the medicine wheel as the example. I know Grandpa Tom Yellowtail, he used the wagon wheel, but the medicine wheel, you know, it's the same thing, in that the circle on the outside, there's a circle and then there's spokes that lead to the center.
Mm-hmm.
And that circle on the outside represents the world.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the people on, you know, of the world are on that outside circle. And there are all these spokes that lead to the center.
Yes.
And those are the different religions.
Mm-hmm.
The spokes are the different religions of the world. And so if I'm on this spoke here, that spoke over there looks like the opposite of my spoke.
Mm-hmm.
But it still leads to the same place, which is the center.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that's the Creator. And if they want to call Him God, or if they mm-hmm. want to call Him Allah, or if they want to call Him the Creator, whatever it is that they want to call Him, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
These religions all lead to that same place.
Yes.
And so we believe that all of these things are good. And so when the churches were coming and converting people to their religions, they felt like, well, you know, it can't hurt. You know, it's leading to the same place. And so a lot of them did get
mm-hmm.
baptized,
mm-hmm.
but they never turned away from their Indian ways.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, you'll see some of those people who are real strong in the Catholic Church or real strong in the Episcopal
mm-hmm.
Church or the Mormon Church, whatever mm-hmm. it is, but yet they practice their Indian spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
They participate in the Sundance, and that's their core belief.
Mm-hmm.
But they see that going to church on Sundays helps me get closer to Him too, and
uh-huh.
it's not going to hurt. It's not mm-hmm. going to pull me away. And so there are a lot of people that live that
mm-hmm.
that way and accept things that way. And
mm-hmm.
you know, when those teachings were brought to our people, we believed in the Creator. We believed in being honest.
Yes.
All of those things that they were teaching, they weren't any different than what we
mm-hmm.
were taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what we were teaching, and so it wasn't a bad thing.
Yes.
So, you know, today I think that as far as the young people go, I would hope that somehow that teaching that the older people had, you know, in being able to accept all these
yes.
other religions but still holding strong to their own belief, the Native American way, will continue on. You know, as far as education goes, you know, we're able to teach more of the culture in education as we are in the churches. There were some things that happened that I think that were pretty negative in our history, and a lot of it had to do with the churches and with the boarding schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through education, I think that a lot of the people that were coming to teach the Indian people wanted to teach them about religion, and then and also teach them, give them an education, and they were kind of doing that together. And so there were a lot of boarding schools that were run by Catholic churches or Episcopal churches or whatever, and some of those ended up being pretty hurtful. There were a lot of things that my grandmother, a lot older when she passed away, and so there were, I used to try to go to her house, you know, as every day if I could, just to stop and see her and visit with her. And that, you know, there were times that I would just go and just talk with her, and she would sit and tell stories, and she wouldn't do it right away, and so you kind of have to just sit around and wait, and just eventually, you know, she would kind of just start talking about things. But if you tried to pry or if you tried to ask questions, she wouldn't. One day she was telling me about the boarding school and about her experience with that, and she had lasted quite a while. Her mother and her father worked real hard. You know, they planted, there were a lot of vegetables and different things that they would plant, and then they would take it and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they made money. But she spent most of her time with her grandmother. And she said that the schools, you know, the boarding schools were coming to all of the homes and getting the children. And if the adults wouldn't let the children go, then they were arrested, put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But then the children were basically taken from the homes and taken to the boarding schools and forced, you know, to live at the boarding school,
mm-hmm.
basically like, you know, prisoners.
Were they allowed to learn their language?
Mm-hmm. No, they were severely punished if they tried to speak their language. And it was part of their way, I think, of... you know, there's the melting pot of America where all of the people from the different countries had come to America, and they tried to lose their identity from that country and become a part of the melting pot of America.
Yes.
And I think that same idea was something that the government was trying to apply to the Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indian people just resisted. So when the children were brought there, and they when they would try to communicate with each other, they were punished if they used their language. They were told that their Indian ways were bad, mm-hmm. that they were wrong. Basically just brainwashed, you know, about that the white way, the American way was the best way and the only way and the only good way.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about you and about your people is bad mm-hmm. and negative. And those are the kinds of things that they were told and taught. And so mm-hmm. even their way of prayer, their way of worship, their traditional dress, everything was looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taught that from mm-hmm. really young. You know, they were taken out of the homes at like age 6, you know, 5 and 6, mm-hmm. and put in these boarding schools. And she said her grandmother had hit her for quite a while, but they finally got caught, and she got taken from her grandmother and taken to the school. And she said the police took her. She wasn't even dressed mm-hmm. properly.
Mm-hmm.
And she said they just took her just like that, and she took her to the school, and she arrived at the school, everybody was just looking at her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They gave her, you know, a uniform, and she said that one of her cousins was there, and they ran away. They were able to get out of the school
mm-hmm.
and run away, escaped from the school, basically. And she said, we got down to the river, and she said it was already getting cold. She said they had dogs that tracked them.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we got into the water and we followed the water up. And she said, we stayed in the water so that they couldn't track us. And their dresses, you know, froze because it was so cold. And they finally made it home. And she said she remembers being so happy to be home. The fire was going and they had dried their clothes and, you know, got them warm and mm-hmm. fed them. And she said they had gone to bed, and they were so happy to be home. And then early in the morning, you know, the cops had arrived and took them back
mm.
to the school. And she said when they got back there that they chained her and her niece together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a steel ball that they had to carry.
Oh, yes.
So that if they did try to escape, that they couldn't go very far
mm.
very fast
mm.
because that steel ball was really heavy in it. So they were shackled together, plus this ball they had was chained to them as well.
Yeah.
And so they had to carry that everywhere, to class, to lunch, to do their work, their chores.
Mm.
It was just really a difficult thing.
Has that kind of attitude from the government completely changed nowadays?
Yes, it's different. I think that the attitude from the American Indian people
mm-hmm.
hasn't changed, you know, toward the government. It's hard for them to... I think that those attitudes towards education are still similar. You know, some of those are still passed
uh-huh.
from generation to generation because of what happened to them. So it's difficult. But I think that for the most part, that things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things are different today. And we know that education is important. You know, we encourage education. But, you know, like I said, it's really hard to overcome some of the things. You know, in my grandmother's generation, you know, a lot of them were basically brainwashed and really believed what the government was telling them.
Mm.
You know, that they were bad and that our Indian ways were bad. And, you know, I could sometimes hear that in my grandmother too, you know, when she would talk. And my mom was really lucky because she wasn't raised by her. She wasn't raised by my grandmother,
mm-hmm.
who was her mother. She was raised by her grandmother,
uh-huh.
which was my grandmother's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother's mother escaped. She was already too old to go to the boarding school, so mm-hmm. she didn't have to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
So she lived the old way,
mm-hmm.
the traditional way. And then when she raised my mother was raised the traditional way, the
mm-hmm.
old way.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really lucky. If she had been raised by her mother, then she probably would have had those same teachings that the boarding school had
yes.
taught her. And it was really created a lot of dysfunction within our communities because when you took those children out of the homes, they didn't learn what a mother is. They didn't learn what a father is. All they saw was the way that they had to operate within this boarding school
mm-hmm.
system, which is more like a prison. We didn't have corporal punishment within our traditional
mm-hmm.
ways. But they were taught corporal punishment.
Yes.
And so they were taught that if you wanted somebody to listen to you, you hit them. And if they won't listen to you, then you hit them and make them listen to you. Because that's what happened to them in the boarding schools.
Mm-hmm.
So they never learned what the proper role of a mother was. They never learned what a proper role of a father was.
Mm-hmm.
They never learned how families function or how they operate.
Mm-hmm.
They just existed in this boarding school system.
Yes.
And then when they got out of that, they didn't know how to be a mother. They didn't
mm.
know how to be a father. When they had children, then now that has been passed down.
Mm.
There are a few people, like I said, that are lucky, like my mom,
mm-hmm.
that was raised by her grandmother,
mm-hmm.
that learned those traditional ways and feel strongly about our Indian ways and about how beneficial they are, you
yes.
know, even in our lives today. So I think that, you know, it was a blessing in the long run
mm.
for my mother.
And do you think there are hopes that these older customs and these traditional Native American social values are being now again adopted by newer generations?
I think that there are a lot of people that are realizing the importance
mm.
of them and are turning back to our Indian ways.
Mm.
Another thing that we've been fortunate on our reservation is that in the early 1900s, not only were they taking children and putting them into boarding schools to brainwash them, teach them a different way, but at the same time, the government itself had also, through the agencies on each reservation, they contacted the superintendent on each reservation and had told them that basically that it was illegal for anybody to practice their Native American spirituality, or even their social dances. So those things were banned in the early 1900s.
Mm.
My great-grandfather on the other side of our family, Chief Washke, was on my grandmother's father's side, but on my grandmother's mother's side, her brother was a Sundance chief. The medicine bundle was passed to him, and he was around in his early 30s,
mm-hmm.
and then he danced up until his 90s. He led the ceremony. And the Sundance was something that was really important to her, because
mm-hmm.
not only because of her brother, but before her brother ran the Sundance, her mother's two brothers were leaders One's name was Wuwuchi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other brother was named, he had an English name, it was Andrew Brazil. These two brothers, they were leaders in the Sundance, the Sundance chief of the Shoshone before her brother was. And then their father and her mother's father, his name was Pasit, and he was the Sundance chief before them. And then Pasit's father was Ohamagwea, which means yellow-handed Shoshone, and he was the Sundance chief before them. And so this responsibility was passed from Ohamagwea to Pasi, from Pasi to Wuwuchi and Andrew Brazil, and from them, they taught John Trujillo. And John Trujillo, he died in 1985. He was 113
mm-hmm.
years old when he passed away, and then the responsibility went from him to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that that responsibility has to be within that bloodline, but so far it has been within the bloodline, and so it's seven generations back from me to Yellow Hand. But what was really fortunate for our reservation was that my great-grandfather, John Trujillo, when all the ceremonies were being banned on the reservations, he had gone to our superintendent on our reservation and talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained to him what the Sundance was. That, you know, that we fast for 3 days and three nights. He said we go without food and water for 3 days and three nights. And we go into the Sundance Lodge to pray. And he said, and we're praying to the Creator. And, you know, it's the same as your, what you call God. And he said, you know, that center pole is an intermediary between us and the Creator. He said to us, he said, it's the same as that center pole is what Jesus Christ is to you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and then there's 12 helpers that surround that center pole that represented by those 12 cottonwoods. And he said, and those are like the 12 helpers that Jesus had, which are the 12 disciples. And, you know, he explained all of these things and all the similarities for him to understand that that it wasn't something, we're not worshiping, you know, people refer to us as heathens and
yes.
saying that we're praying to the sun,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Yes.
You know, he explained to them that the Creator had put power into the sun, that there's medicine there, and that it's a strong medicine and it's a strong power, and that we're able to get that medicine and use that strength
yes.
for us, but that we're not praying to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the buffalo was a messenger.
Yes.
Just like the donkey was, you know, when they talked, that God talked to the donkey and the donkey talked to the disciple. It was no different than him talking to the buffalo and the buffalo talking to Yellow Hand
mm-hmm.
and bringing this way to our people. And the eagle and all of the medicine fathers and what they represent. And so he was able to explain to him,
mm-hmm.
that's what this is in your religion. That's what the similarity would be. So the superintendent understood that, and so he was the only reservation where it was allowed to practice our traditional ceremonies. And they were never stopped. Every other reservation, they were stopped, and so ours have never stopped. It's always been continuous. Well, the Crows, they lost so much of their Sundance that they started coming to our Sundance to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wanted to revive their Sundance on their reservation. And mm-hmm. so they asked my grandfather to come there and teach them.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did. He went and he taught them the way that we run things there. And so that's why it's called the Crow Shoshone Sundance mm-hmm. today. But basically that's what had happened on every reservation. And a lot of those tribes came back to these two tribes, to the Shoshone and Arapaho, and, you know, were able to get elements of their traditional ceremonies back.
Mm-hmm.
We've been real fortunate that our ceremonies continue today.